With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe Podcast. Today we're talking about The Bad Batch, Season 2, Episode 6, Tribe, with myself and Aaron McGowan. All that and more after a commercial break we have no control over.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Matthew, they, them pronouns, and I'm joined, as always, on The Bad Batch by Ms. Aaron McGowan, Ahsoka cosplayer extraordinaire. Aaron, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm really excited about my day today. This evening, I'm actually going to be taking an aerial silks class.
Ooh, nice.
So, yeah, I'm excited to spin around and twist myself up and see what happens.
Sounds
good.
How
about good.
You? Doing good. This episode, you know, I was thinking, watching this episode, that last season at least, The Bad Batch was a fun show and it connected in ways, but it never really hit the sort of I have emotional damage moments for me, except maybe the first start of Order 66 stuff in the first episode. Mm-hmm. This was one, and not in a bad way at all. Like, I loved it, but this was one, I had chills and like, I was really hit hard by this episode in a way that I did not expect from The Bad Batch. What about you? How did you feel about this episode?
Yeah, I mean, similar. Like, we haven't visited the Order 66 Jedi thing in a while mm-hmm. on The Bad Batch. And especially seeing Gungi, like, a Padawan that we knew, that we saw in the Clone Wars. We saw him get his Kyber Crystal and make his first lightsaber. And to see him now, he's been on the run for about a year or however long it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just hurt and he's scared. And just like to see that and bring him back to like his people, but they can't find his tribe, but they just like accept him anyways. It was just really beautiful.
Yeah. So let me give a quick plot summary for those who either haven't seen the episode or are listening to this later and want a refresher. We start out with our heroes, the Bad Batch. They're in the middle of some kind of clandestine deal, and like the lighting and the music really lets you know like they're not dealing with the best people in this episode. And they're all droids who are part of, I think it was the Axis faction. Was that what they were called?
Yeah, the station is called the Vanguard Axis.
Right.
So I think,
and they are they basically want chain codes, the things that the Empire is using to identify all people. So it's a way to kind of allow people to like, you know, have, you know, a forged identity for people who are on the run or things like that. Definitely can have some good uses in this day and age in Star Wars, but also some not so good, as we'll see. And in the course of doing this, Omega hears, she's back by the ship. She goes wandering a little bit and she finds a couple of the droids pretty much torturing a young Wookiee. And so she gets involved. She jumps in. The Wookiee starts fighting them. She helps him. And more chaos ensues. There's battles. The Bad Batch is pretty quick to say, okay, once we see you torturing a child and like enslaving people, as they're clearly doing, because at one point the droids say, well, because the Bad Batch, one of them says, you know, you can't smuggle people. And the droid's response is, for the right price, I can do anything I want. At which point the Bad Batch are like, cool, we're jumping right in, we're helping. They help the young Wookiee, and during the course of the fighting, we find out that he's a Jedi. And in a really great reveal, I thought, that we'll talk about. And so they help him. There's some great moments on the ship of him being very nervous around them because they're clones, and he has just seen all of his friends, the entire Jedi community, wiped out by clones. But eventually they kind of make connections with each other, particularly through Omega, and they decide to take him back home to his home planet of Kashyyyk. And they do that, where they find a bunch of Trandoshans who are using Imperial technology and, in theory, kind of connected to the Empire. They're laying waste to parts of Kashyyyk. They're enslaving Wookiees. And then a big battle ensues between them and the Bad Batch, who work with the Wookiees, who does really beautiful, like, we really see kind of more of the Wookiee culture and mysticism in the way that they are connected to the trees, and that the trees talk to them and give them a plan. And they win the battle, and there's a beautiful kind of celebration moment at the end, and that's the episode. Did I miss anything super important?
I don't think so. There's these creepy little spiders that help them at the end. They're not little. They're huge. They're like 20 feet tall.
Yeah. They're kind of like not quite like the spiders that we saw on Lothal. No, not Lothal. What's the planet where they meet the Bendu? Is that Lothal in Rebels?
Oh, God. I have no idea. I feel like it is, because I feel like Kanan always just hops on a speeder and not in a ship to go see Bendu.
Yeah, I think it is on Lothal. Let us know in the comments, but please be gentle. But yeah, they're to be reminiscent of that kind of spider, but they're not quite the same. It's sort of, you know, giant spiders are on a lot of planets, which makes me less enthused about the Star Wars galaxy, but different question. So let me just start by asking you this. When we first meet that young Wookiee, did you immediately think that this is Genji?
Okay, so I have to expose myself here. I was watching it, and there was like, we heard a Wookiee. And I wrote down, definitely Chewie. And then 2 seconds later, I was like, no Gungi. In my notes, I just have, definitely Chewie, no Gungi.
Uh-huh.
And I'm so silly for missing that, because I've been avoiding, you know, trailers and spoilers. But one thing I did see and know was that Gungi was going to be in this season.
Oh, okay.
And then I fully forgot, so it was still a surprise for me. I was like, wait a minute, I know that Wookiee.
Yeah. I didn't see it at all. I had that half second of Chewie, but then remembered that we actually know that Chewie is a fully grown adult by this point.
Exactly.
And has been for some time, because we saw him back in the Clone Wars or during the movies. But for some reason I remember that there's a wonderful little Wookiee child in the Clone Wars who's a Jedi, but the Bad Batch has been so pretty clear about, like, the Jedi are mostly wiped out, we're not running into them all the time, that it didn't click for me. And then there's this beautiful reveal moment where you just see him kind of, like, reaching out for something, and then you notice that it's, like, it could be, like, a lightsaber thing, and then it's just, like, the recognition starts to dawn on me, and then it hits his hand, and it lights up as a lightsaber, and I'm like, yes! I just thought that was so well done, and we've talked a lot about how the Bad Batch has mostly avoided the Force, and that I'm really happy with that. I thought this was a perfect way to integrate it just a little bit. Of like, yes, this is still a thing going on. There are survivors of Order 66 running around, but they're very rare, and he's not going to take over the story now, because by the end of the episode, he's left with his family on Kashyyyk, and they're going off on their next mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciated that, because it would seem silly to fully ignore that, being that the mm-hmm. clones were such a big part of Order 66. So yeah, I liked seeing him again. Seeing his lightsaber. Ugh. Because he has the cutest, it's a wooden lightsaber, and it's just the coolest thing I've ever seen.
That's it. That's why, because when the thing started, like, rumbling as he's trying to force pull it, I didn't immediately recognize it as a lightsaber handle. But you're right. It's because it's wooden. It's not mm-hmm. it's not the shiny metal that we're used to.
Exactly, yeah. So I loved that because we got to see him craft that exact lightsaber in the Clone Wars, and they explain kind of what exactly wood it was made out of. I think it was a wood from Kashyyyk, and it's something that's as strong as metal, basically.
Yeah, I think it's from one of those trees that they have. There's a mystical connection with, which I really loved. So what'd you think of seeing his story again? Because, I was really struck by it, but I want to hear from you first. Like, what was kind of your, like, when we know it's him, how'd you feel about how his story plays out in this episode?
I mean, I think it played out well. I was happy with it. It was good. It was tough, you know, because, like, last we saw him, he was just this cute little Wookiee having a good time, going on adventures with his friends, pretending to be circus performers. And now we see him and he has no friends. He has nothing. And he's just trying to stay alive and happens upon some people that are willing to help him. And I feel like he doesn't trust it at first. He doesn't believe it. And then they do end up back on Kashyyyk, and he starts, like, to be more hopeful, sees that it's been decimated and kind of razed, gets upset again, and then they do happen upon other Wookiees who bring him back to the tribe. They meet Yana, which is the tribe leader, and she kind of talks to Gunji, and they figure out, you know, he doesn't know where he's from, he doesn't know what tribe, he doesn't know his family. But she's like, well, we're going to keep you here because this is where you belong.
That was one of the things that really hit me the hardest, because I think it totally makes sense to the clones who don't have, you know, they have fought a little with the Jedi, but they don't know that much about, like, all the inner workings of the Jedi. They're like, oh, he's a Wookiee. His home planet is Kashyyyk. But there's a line where it says he doesn't remember what village he's from, because he was probably taken from that village as a very, very young child, like most of the Jedi were. His home planet, the planet where he has lived 99% of his life, was Coruscant. And so there's this beautiful moment of kind of the fact that the tribe that was still so accepting of him, and Yana especially, has this moment of, like, you don't know it yet, but this is your home. It's always been your home, and you're always welcome here. I don't know. I know there's all sorts of debates out there about whether the Jedi are right or wrong to take children that young. And I certainly have some thoughts about it that are not the most positive towards the Jedi. But not even getting into that debate, it just, to me, it was such a beautiful way of illustrating the consequences of that decision. Of that once the Jedi fall, you have all of these, particularly Padawans, but all of them, who may want to go home. But of course, not the only home they've known. And so it's this reconnection moment that just, it was really beautiful to see.
Yeah, I agree.
So at the very end, we get this moment of so towards the very end of the episode, one thing, you know, we established that, like, they talk to the trees, and I love that the Bad Batch is kind of a little, like, they're surprised by it, but not in an insulting way. And at one point, Tech just explains what's happening, and but doesn't. He's clearly not judging it. He just says, like, they believe that the trees do this, and which I appreciated. And at the very end, we have a moment of Gunji kind of putting his hand on the tree in a kind of meditative listening moment, and Omega's right next to him doing the same thing, and. What did you think was happening there? Because I could see it either as Omega is just kind of mirroring what she's seeing around her and trying to do what they're doing because she's into this, and that's what she does always. Or did you think it was supposed to be a moment of hinting that she might be Force-sensitive as well?
I agree with the first thing you said. I kind of felt like she's Omega. She wants to understand. She wants to be in it with the people that she's with. And I think it's just like she saw before that all the Wookiees, they sat there, they put their hands on the tree, and they communicated, and the trees laid out a plan for them to defeat the Transdotians and the Stormtroopers. And then after that battle, we see them again, and Gunji puts his hand on the tree, and that's when Omega joins him. And I think she's just like, almost like thanking the tree. She wants to communicate with them. Like, they were allies. They helped them out. And I just saw it as, like, just like a normal person connecting with nature, kind of.
Yeah. I think that's where I go, too. And I asked the question in part because, well, I was curious also if you saw it differently, but also because I imagine we're going to get a lot of, look, look, this is proof she's Force sensitive. And I'm sure they opened the idea that she might be at some point, but I really agree with you that I don't think that that's what this means. I think it's just because most of the other Wookiees who are communing with the trees like that are not Force sensitive themselves.
Yeah.
What else about the episode really stood out to you that you wanted to comment on?
I had a few things. Just a funny Tech quote.
Uh-huh.
Is when, so we have Wrecker, Hunter, and Tech at the start of the episode. They're meeting with the droids on, from, what did you call it? The Axis?
Yeah, I think it's the Axis connection or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And the droids are double checking the chain codes and they hear some blaster fire. And then all the droids leave to go find out what it is. And Tech goes, the cause of that blaster fire is either Echo or Omega. Most likely Omega.
Yep.
And it's just, it's so funny to me. And of course he's right. It's always Omega.
And it's so perfect because from any other character, you'd expect it to be like, ugh, what is Omega up to again? You know, some degree of, like, loving exasperation, but definitely exasperation. From him, he is literally just stating a fact.
Yeah.
And, like, you can see that other people would have some feelings about it, but he, in the same way that he was with the Wookiees and their trees. It's just like, this is the fact. That is almost certainly Omega who is causing this ruckus. I really liked what we saw from the Bad Batch in general this episode, particularly because both when they're first meeting, I keep wanting to call him Grogu, Genji, when they first meet Genji, and also on the planet with the Trandoshans, where it starts out where they're not going to fight necessarily, but Genji just jumps into the fight, the Bad Batch pretty much immediately follows. You know, they've had a lot of moments up till now, especially in season one, but even in this season early, of like them trying to decide when is someone else's fight their fight. And here, and I think, you know, you've joked about them going, being the Dad Batch, which I think is kind of very true. Mm-hmm. It, and Hunter's the one who says it, but they all clearly agree it's because children are being harmed, that they just have no question, we're not allowing this to stand, we're getting involved.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked that. It's just like, no matter the danger or like the political affiliations or whatever, like they have their morals, and that includes protecting children.
Yeah.
Because everyone should protect children. They should be able to be children. And in this moment, like we've seen with Omega, she never got to be a child. And we see especially with Gunji, he absolutely never got to be a child. He was a Padawan. He was always training, you know. There's a sense of childlikeness with it. But, you know, we actually didn't see him as a Padawan. We saw him as a youngling.
Right.
But now the Jedi have fallen and he can never be a child again. He's fighting for his life at all moments.
Right.
And I think they see and they recognize how hurt and scared and unsafe he feels. And that, like, really strikes a note with the Bad Batch, because they're like, that's how Omega felt when we first found her. She was alone and she was scared and she was trying to find people to connect with. And so I think, yeah, it was just beautiful that it kind of paralleled with how they reacted to Gunji and being so willing to help him find his people and help him find the family that he can connect to.
I hadn't even put my finger on it, but that's such a great connection of his early moments being like Omega's early moments. And I think it's – I wonder if he would have been able to build that trust with the Bad Batch if Omega wasn't there. Because for him – again, we don't hear him say this, but for I have to imagine she doesn't look like a clone. She's not in the armor of the people that he last saw, you know, decimating all of his fellow Jedi. And you know, executing all of his fellow Jedi. So yeah, I love that connection. I think you're really right. And that it's Omega who's the bridge between them is so important.
Absolutely.
There's a particular line also that I love that speaks to that. I think it's from Hunter. Hunter is talking to Yana and says, you know, look at them being children. It's so sad that they didn't get to be children. And Yana talks about the, you know, that they could find other path. That he has now found his home. Genji has, and so there can be paths for all of us, which might well imply that we're still going to go find a home for Omega. But either way, I just thought it was such a beautiful sentiment of both of these adults recognizing, like, this is one of the tragedies that's happened to these two kids.
Yeah.
What other things stood out for you?
I had a couple notes about the Trandoshans. I've come to realize through the Clone Wars and through other episodes or other things where we've seen Trandoshans. I think they were in like Obi-Wan Kenobi. Trandoshans are as strong as the plot needs them to be.
Yep.
In the Clone Wars, we saw Ahsoka and two other former Padawans fighting these Trandoshans that were hunting them for sport. And it took three of them to take down one Trandoshan. They were punching him, punching him in the face. He would just not even move, just stare straight back and headbutt them kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
In this episode, we saw Hunter literally punch out a Trandoshan.
Yeah.
I wrote down, Hunter absolutely did not just punch out a Trandoshan. Because I was like, there's no way. And then it's just, yeah, it's funny. We saw several of them taken down with one blaster shot. And we saw that for Wookiees, too. And in the past, right. We've never seen that. Wookiees can take a few shots. Trandoshans can take a few shots.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was just kind of funny.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about kind of the role that Trandoshans have started to play. And we see them as far back as Empire Strikes Back when Vader has, you know, called together all those bounty hunters to go looking for the Millennium Falcon and Han Solo and all the rest of them. It's funny because in a lot of the different parts of the universe, in a lot of different parts of Star Wars, we're starting to explore the idea of, like, you know, even the people we're fighting, they're still other sentients. They're other people. And that they're not always all good or all bad. The Trandoshans are just, like, they're always bad. You know, they're kind of become the stand-in of, like, like the bad battle droids, they're always just going to be evil and bad and terrible. And so, therefore, anything we do to them is always okay. Mm-hmm. And what this really stuck out for me was there's a moment when Genji is watching three of the spiders, like, just beating up on one of the Trandoshans. And then he's watching, and I was kind of like, is he going to step in? Is he going to, like, stop this?
I had the same thought, yeah.
And then we see him, like, get wrapped up in the spider web and kind of being slowly pulled up. And I was like, is this when Genji is going to intervene in some way? And then Genji just walks away.
Just lets it happen.
I don't blame him, like, but it felt like a Jedi would have to stand in and be like, no, the sanctity of all life, I have to, like, stop this. And it may well be that for Genji, he was like, he's seen that the ideals of the Jedi didn't really work very well, and he's a little more pragmatic, and if that's where he is, God bless him. But I also felt like because it was a Trandoshan, like, I don't know if they could have done that if it was an Imperial officer, you know, or someone else like that who... And both within the story, I think that makes sense, but also outside the story, it's like, is it because those people are so, you know, they're reptilian, they look evil, I hate even using that kind of language, but, like, they look like the kind of thing that we're conditioned to think, like, oh, that's a bad alien, and so therefore it's okay to do those things to him. It was a really interesting, like, I'm wondering where the writers are going with this.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Trandoshans are almost always used as evil. The only mm-hmm. one we've seen be good is Cid. And yeah. I always forget that Cid is a Trandoshan because she's good and because she's shorter than the rest of them. Like, you just don't think of her in the same, like, oh, this is like a tank person who's just going to take you out and do all this bad stuff.
I think it's always the men who are out hunting. I don't think we've ever seen any women Trandoshans, like, out fighting.
That's a really good point. I don't know if we've ever seen a female Trandoshan. Other than Cid.
I would love it if at some point we run across a Trandoshan who's, like, running an underground railroad, you know, who's like, oh, I'm horrified. Like, just give us a little more depth to that community.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great.
But it was some great storytelling. One other moment that stood out for me is that as far back as Chewbacca in the original movies, the Wookiees have spoken their language that I can't quite pronounce the name of, and...
It's Shriwook.
Shriwook, thank you. And we never get like a full translation. We get, you know, Han responding to them or Han or someone else saying, like, well, this, you know, he's saying, like, be careful about him. We always get the clear indication of what the Wookiee is saying, but very rarely the exact wording. And in Revenge of the Sith, we did get, like, direct text on screen translations, and I really didn't like it because it felt like it was And like, I kind of felt like that was, it was sort of set apart in a way that we didn't get that for the most part. And so I loved that at the very end, you know, even throughout the episode, Tech is paraphrasing what they're saying. Mm-hmm. But at the very end, when Yana is like giving these comments about like how, yes, we won this fight, but it was difficult and all that, Tech literally translates it word for word. And you can see like the translator on the screen going. And it was a small little thing, but that struck me really hard of how much respect it was of like, I'm not going to paraphrase. I want you to hear her exact words.
Yeah, like what she's saying is very powerful. Like it has a lot of meaning. And it needs to be heard exactly as it said. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, that's about all I had on this episode. Anything else you wanted to touch base on?
Not really, other than just the continued theme of always losing children during battles.
Yeah.
They're just out there fighting the Trandoshans with the Wookiees. Pa, pa, pa. All of a sudden, I don't remember who it was. It was either Hunter or Echo. Where are the kids?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Omega and Gunji running through the forest, chasing or running from Captain Venomar, which is the Trandoshan that we see pulled up into the spiderweb.
Right. Yeah, that's right also. He was the leader of that, so maybe that's even more okay that we're seeing him tortured.
Right.
But again, it's like, I don't have any problems with it. I was surprised Genji didn't have any problems with it, but
yeah.
There you go. Because I like Obi-Wan... Anakin, I think, would have been like, sure. And Ahsoka would have been like, master! Like,
Ahsoka would have stepped in. Obi-Wan would have stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin, almost definitely not.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of very telling that Gunji didn't.
Yeah.
Because it's, to me, it was kind of a sign of like, he has fully detached himself from the Jedi. He doesn't really... Okay, maybe not fully, but... He's detached himself from some of their morals. He understands that they were wrong and that it led them to a place that made them vulnerable.
Right.
And he's trying to avoid that.
Well, especially because, like you said, he never even became a Padawan. He never had a master. So there's probably some extent to which that lesson wasn't really drummed in his head as much.
Yeah.
But also, yeah, I think it's that he's, especially when he never says, like, Kashyyyk was never my home. Or he's like, the Jedi are done. The Jedi are gone. This is who I am now.
Yeah.
Which leads to the last thing I guess I wanted to say. And I don't want me to end this on a dark note. Maybe you can offer some hope in a different way.
I have a funny thing afterwards.
Okay, good. So we won't be total darkness. But respond to this as well. I loved seeing that Genji survived. But for me, and I know that I'm kind of a little bit of an original trilogy purist, and this has become like less and less true, you know, by the time of the original trilogy... The idea is that the Jedi are pretty much completely wiped out. You know, there's Obi-Wan and Yoda still hanging around, though barely. There's Luke, who they can refer to as the last hope. You know, Ahsoka, because of the timey-wimey shenanigans, winds up missing all of this. There's one or two others who might be out there. But every time you show a Jedi who survived Order 66, you have to then ask the question, why weren't they involved in the civil war against the Empire? And... I think what we're supposed to... Maybe they're going to say that he survived somehow and he just hit on Kashyyyk. But I think from everything they've told us, especially by the time of Rebels, that these Inquisitors are out there hunting down the last of the lost Jedi and mostly finding them. I think he's eventually... My thought is that he's one of the ones who is eventually caught and probably killed. And I hope not turned. But, you know, he probably does not survive till the Galactic Civil War.
I get that. I would say... I kind of hold out the hope, maybe, or have the thought of, since we saw him differing from the Jedi in that way with the Trandoshan captain, that maybe he, in the next few months or years of being with his tribe and his people, maybe he just does put that all behind him and just fully dives into being a Wookiee.
Right.
And I don't know if the Inquisitors have, like, lists of all the Padawans and things like that. I don't remember if they do. But if they don't, and he's not using his lightsaber and he's not acting as a Jedi...
Right.
I don't know that they would find him. My one question, were the Wookiees involved in the Civil War against the Empire?
So we know from a number of different sources that the Empire does take over Kashyyyk and that Wookiee slaves are being used to build the Death Star... You remember, there's an episode in Rebels where they rescue some of them. So, certainly by that time, we know that the Empire is all over Kashyyyk. And I have trouble imagining that Gunji wouldn't fight back using all of his powers. But yeah, maybe he escapes, or maybe he gets away, or maybe he does, as you say, fully close himself off to the Force, and so they never quite recognize who he is. It's possible. It's certainly possible.
Yeah.
So what was your last one thing?
Oh, yeah. I just thought it was funny when Hunter was talking about Gunji and was like, talking to Gunji. He goes, mm-hmm. Oh, make sure you don't use your laser sword so they don't know you're a Jedi. It's yeah. like, Hunter, you fought with the Jedi. You know that's a lightsaber. What are you talking about? Yeah. Laser sword. You sound stupid right now. I just thought that
Except
was funny.
Except that's what, like, even Luke says that, you know,
right?
Last Jedi. Like, I like it's become kind of the slang term.
True.
But yeah,
true.
It was a little bit silly from him. That's for sure.
True.
So I think that's a good place to wrap up this main section. For those who are supporters of us on Patreon, we're going to have a bonus content, as we always do. And for those of you who want to join us and support us on Patreon, it's a great way to help keep, you know, help show your support for the podcast we're doing, both here and on Superhero Ethics. You get some great things, including access to the bonus content. You get merch. You can help us plan an episode at higher rates. And I want to just say a quick thank you to those people who've recently signed up. Mary Garrett, Paul Christopher Hoppe, Steve Maloney, and Riley, thank you all so much for becoming patrons. And of course, if you don't want to become a patron, no problem at all. There's other great ways to support this show. Make sure you like, you subscribe, you follow us, you give us 5-star reviews, or, you know, not 5-star, if you have some comments to make, please let us know. Reviews are always so helpful. Share this with your friends. Get them into the conversation. And most importantly, you can join the conversation with us. We love user feedback. We've gotten some great comments already. We're probably going to do a feedback episode pretty soon. You can find us on TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, email, and all that information is in both the show notes and at theethicalpanda.com. So please check out that website. Please follow. Please think about joining us on Patreon. Paul Hoppe, Zen Madman, who's been a regular co-host on both of my shows, he's actually started a Patreon of his own as well now, where he's talking about what he's doing with poker and chess and learning. A lot of great stuff there. Definitely worth checking out. And so, Aaron, for those people who want to, you know, see more about what you're doing with cosplay and, like, your Star Wars opinions and all that kind of stuff, where can they find you?
Yeah. So my handle is Lady.Tano.Creates. And that's on Instagram and TikTok. Come join me. See what I have to say about. Let's be honest. I mostly talk about clones and cosplay. So
two good topics.
So. If you like that, come on by.
Definitely worth checking out. Definitely worth checking out.
And if you find me through the podcast, comment on my video and tell me that, because I'm always curious. I'm like, are these new followers from the podcast, or did they just happen upon my account?
Yes, definitely please do that, because I would love to know, because one of the things I'm so honored that we get you as a guest, we get all these great people as guests, and you know, one of the few things I can give back is giving that opportunity for other people to find what you're doing. So please do check out all the things that Lady Tano is creating, mm-hmm. and if you do, let us know that you come from here. So please do all that. Please think. And most importantly, thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.